6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
I'm not exactly a tech genius, but I knew one thing for sure. If I wanted my small business to crush it, I needed a website that worked like a pro, and I needed it yesterday. Lucky for me, Bluehost made it ridiculously easy. With their AI design tools, building my website was a walk in the park. I could customize, optimize, and monetize everything exactly how I wanted. In just a few minutes, I had a secure site up and running. I couldn't believe how straightforward it was. And getting found online? Bluehost helped me with that, too. I perfected my keywords and meta descriptions with their search engine tools. The AI even gave me suggestions to improve my pages. Now I can sit back, relax, and focus on my customers, while my website continues to rank higher and higher on Google. With their 30-day money-back guarantee, I wasn't worried about taking the plunge. And now I'm so glad I did. Head over to Bluehost.com and build something special today.
You're watching a Highwire Media podcast.
After a long hiatus and a much-needed vacation, we're back with our season of Beyond Borders. This week, we're diving into the Lockerbie bombing. Before we do that, give me your thoughts in the comments section below. And with that, let's dive in. For over 30 years, families of the victims of Pan Am Flight 103 have longed for some closure. Now it looks as if officials have a suspect in the 1988 bombing. This is the heartbreaking story of that tragic flight. On December 21st, 1988, Pan Am 103 was beginning the second leg of its Frankfurt, London, New York, Detroit route. The Boeing 747, known as the Clipper Maid of the Seas, left London Heathrow with 243 passengers and 16 crew members, including 189 Americans. 40 minutes into the flight, the plane had reached the coast of Scotland. According to the official accident report, the pilot requested clearance to proceed with the transatlantic portion of the flight from Shanwick Oceanic Area Control at 1858 Universal Time Coordinated, or UTC. At 1902 UTC, the officers at the Air Traffic Control Center cleared the flight to proceed, but did not receive a response. One of the ground officers only reported a strange noise, presumably from the cockpit. Once five different objects showed up on the radar instead of the plane, the officials began to fear the worst. The Shanwick officers' fears were correct. At around 1900 UTC, a bomb in a Samsonite suitcase exploded, ripping through the fuselage and fragmenting the plane. The Irish Times quoted witnesses as seeing a ball of fire in the night sky as wreckage rained down upon the small Scottish town of Lockerbie. The FBI ultimately recorded debris over an area of 845 square miles. Soon, teams from international intelligence agencies and security bureaus, such as the FBI and the CIA, were on the ground looking for any sort of wreckage from the plane. Investigators sought the black box and anything else that could help reconstruct the tragedy. The explosion killed all 259 people on board the plane. While some died instantly, Dr. William Eckert of Wichita State University told the Associated Press that around 148 passengers and the pilot may have survived the initial explosion, only to experience the horror of a 31,000-foot drop to the ground. Many of them would have passed out initially from a lack of oxygen, but regained consciousness somewhere between 15,000 and 10,000 feet. For them, the seemingly never-ending drop must have been horrific. Many were found holding crucifixes, suggesting that they expected to die. The motto of the family members of the past 32 years has been, "The truth must be known." All right, folks, quick reality check. When disaster hits, whether it's a blackout, a blizzard, or God forbid, something worse, the last place you want to be is standing in line at an empty grocery store. That's why I trust Patriot Food Supply, America's number one emergency food kit provider.
Patriot Food Supply meals are made right here in the USA. They've got a 25-year shelf life, and the kits are loaded with delicious, easy-to-make meals that can feed you and your family when things go sideways. We're talking breakfast, lunch, dinner, no bland MREs here. And listen, you don't prep because you're paranoid. You prep because it's smart. You lock your doors, right? Same logic. So go on the link today and get a free get four free 72-hour food kits when you order a four-week food supply. That's real value and real peace of mind. Stay ready, stay safe. That's the Patriot way. Now back to our episode. In addition to the victims on the plane, 11 people on the ground were killed. Their aircraft's wings struck numerous houses on Sherwood Crescent in Lockerbie. Two of the 11 victims had their houses reduced to ash. Their bodies completely incinerated and never found. 21 of the damaged houses were demolished, while more required extensive repairs. Intelligence agencies had some warning prior to the bombing that allowed them to identify preliminary suspects. According to the Washington Post, an anonymous caller phoned a potential threat to the U.S. Embassy in Helsinki on December 5, 1988. Supposedly, a Finnish woman would unwittingly carry a bomb onto a U.S.-bound Pan Am flight from Frankfurt within 2 weeks of the call. The caller also provided two names associated with the Palestinian Abu Nidal militia. This memo pointed to Middle Eastern terror groups, but was dismissed. French and British intelligence suspected Libyan involvement, given President Muammar Gaddafi's support for the 1986 West Berlin nightclub bombing and his ongoing feud with the United States. American investigators found supporting evidence while combing through the Lockerbie wreckage. According to Christopher Joyner and Wayne Rothbaum, investigators discovered a microchip from the bomb that matched the type used to blow up three flights over Chad, Togo, and Niger between 1984 and 1989. In addition, Senegal arrested two Libyan men with Semtex explosives that investigators matched to the Lockerbie bomb fragments. This provided more direction for the investigation, which shifted from Iran to Libya. Following the French intelligence service's leads, British intelligence identified two Libyans, Abdel Basset al-Megrahi and Lamin Khalifa Aima. Apologies for butchering their names. Both men were identified as Libyan intelligence operatives, again suggesting a link to Gaddafi, but until they could be tried, their involvement could not be confirmed. The UK, with American support, requested the men's extradition for a trial in the UK or the United States. Gaddafi refused, citing the Montreal Convention's either extradite or prosecute principle. This principle allowed Libya to try terror suspects on its own soil. The U.S. decided to force Gaddafi's hand with UN Security Council Resolution 748. These sanctions placed restrictions on Libya's aviation industry, military, and high-ranking government officials until Gaddafi withdrew his support for terrorism. As the impasse continued into 1997, international bodies offered to mediate, and the Arab League proposed a compromise. The extradited suspects could be tried in a neutral country outside the UK. With support from South Africa and the Arab League, American Secretary of State Madeleine Albright and British Foreign Secretary Robin Cook offered Gaddafi a deal. The two accused would be tried by a Scottish court in the Netherlands at Camp Zeist, a former NATO base. If they were found guilty, they would serve their sentences in British prison. Gaddafi accepted the offer and extradited both men to face trial. The proceedings began in May 2000. Lamin Khalifa Fahima was found not guilty. He had been in Sweden on the day of the bombing. He could not have been involved. Abdel Basset al-Megrahi's trial was more complicated. The critical piece of evidence was the testimony of the man who had allegedly sold the clothes and the suitcase bomb. During the trial, the main prosecution witness was a Maltese national named Tony Gauci.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why my Lowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only, 5/8 through 5/14. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
She testified that he had sold the clothes to a man of Middle Eastern appearance who resembled al-Megrahi. However, he could not match the man he had met in Malta with the suspect on trial with certainty. He could only recall that a picture of al-Megrahi in a magazine resembled his client. However, his testimony was enough to convict El Megrahi, who was sentenced to life imprisonment in the UK. Later evidence has cast serious doubts about his guilt. Megrahi's conviction vindicated Gaddafi's accusers, with the sanctions taking their toll and affecting Libya's lucrative trading relations with Europe. Gaddafi announced that Libya would take responsibility for the bombing and pay $3 billion to the families and the victims. In return, the UN lifted the sanctions under Resolution 748 and allowed Libya back into the international community. However, while Gaddafi's admission provided a sense of closure to the victims' families, the Libyan president continued to deny responsibility in private. Once the sanctions on Libya were lifted, the emotion over Gaddafi's role died down somewhat. However, the BBC reported in 2009 that El Megrahi was dying of cancer and requested a commutation of his sentence on compassionate grounds. If granted, he would be allowed to return home to Libya to live out the remaining 6 months doctors believed he had left. His appeal caused an uproar in Britain, creating a rift between those who wished to show mercy and those who wished to see him die in prison. Ultimately, the court granted him clemency to the outrage of the victims' families. In 2010 and 2011, the Arab Spring arrived in Libya and soon escalated into a full-blown civil war. Gaddafi was killed in a French bombing raid on Tripoli, leaving a power vacuum for a fragile coalition of Islamists, anti-Gaddafi politicians, and generals to fill. The face of the interim National Transitional Council was former Gaddafi loyalist and justice minister Mustafa Abdul Jalil. He eventually sought asylum in Sweden, where he made some damning claims regarding his former boss's complicity in the Lockerbie bombing. In an explosive interview with a Swedish newspaper, he claimed to have documented proof that Gaddafi had personally ordered the Lockerbie bombing. These claims received some attention in the UK. BBC quoted Scottish MP Murdo Fraser calling it allegations disturbing but believable. For Fraser, Jalil's claims explained why Gaddafi had refused to extradite El Megrahi, lest he implicate the Libyan president during his trial. However, Jalil never presented any evidence in support of his claims. Following El Megrahi's death, attention turned to the original suspect, the Islamic Republic of Iran. In the 2014 Al Jazeera expose Lockerbie, what really happened, Iranian defector, Mizbahi, claimed that the Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khomeini had personally approved the plan. An anonymous Israeli source quoted in the Times of Israel claimed that Khomeini was behind the contracting of Ahmed Jabril, member of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, to carry out the bombing. America's intelligence agencies pointed that if Iran was responsible, it was in revenge for the USS Vincennes' downing of Iran Air 655 over the Persian Gulf in 1986. According to Real Clear World, Khomeini had promised that the skies would rain blood and revenge. Already under pressure over Iran's nuclear program, President Hassan Rouhani denied all allegations. However, a 2020 tweet from Rouhani in response to threats by American President Donald Trump turned some heads, saying, quote, they can't do what they were saying they were going to, because if they do that, they're going to be met with really very violent force. We have no choice. Professor Robert Black told Indian Magazine The Wake that he believed the tweet indicates that Lockerbie was a response to Iran Air 655. Jim Swire, father of Lockerbie victim Flora Swire, called this an admission of guilt in an interview with The Times. As of now, no investigations into the tweet or its possible meaning have taken place. Ultimately, Iran's role is still unclear. Although the role of a Palestinian group makes sense in light of the warning that was phoned in to Helsinki in 1988, American intelligence services have mostly sidelined the Iranian angle and have pursued the Libyan angle further. The latest development in the Lockerbie bombing case came on December 21st, 2020, the 32nd anniversary of the bombing. Attorney General William Barr and the U.S. Department of Justice announced new charges against a third Libyan currently incarcerated in his home country. The DOJ identified the former senior Libyan intelligence official as Abu Aguila Masoud Khair al-Marimi, but no other information was provided at the time. The Lockerbie case has taken numerous twists and turns. When justice appeared served, it was revealed that special interests and economic expediency has tainted the trials of the suspects. Megrahi's family has continued to fight his conviction posthumously, and on January 15, 2021, Scotland rejected an appeal to vacate El Megrahi's conviction. When Attorney General William Barr indicted, Marini in 2020, the suspect was still in Libyan custody and needed to be extradited to face trial. But his sudden appearance in the United States in 2022 raised questions about how exactly he arrived there. In 2021, the Libyan government in Tripoli said it was open to collaboration on al-Marini's extradition, except, as ABC noted, there is no extradition treaty. U.S. officials have not issued a comment on the matter, and many outlets have simply said he was extradited. But as it noted in the AP, it is possible that American agents may have kidnapped al-Marini and taken him to the States to face trial. The only evidence currently available is a Libyan report and claims from al-Marini's family that Tripoli looked the other way regarding the kidnapping, as implied by government silence on the suspect's disappearance. Regardless, his presence in America is confirmed, and he has made his first court appearance. Al-Marini is the first Lockerbie suspect to appear in U.S. court and face two counts of destruction of an aircraft causing death and one count of destruction of a commercial vehicle causing death. While both of these could carry the death penalty, the Biden administration and Department of Justice said it will seek life imprisonment instead should he be found guilty. For Lockerbie relatives, it presents a chance to finally find closure on a case that has dragged on for over 30 years. And that is the story of the Lockerbie bombing. Give us a thumbs up if you like our videos. Hit the subscribe button down below. Hit the bell notification to be notified of future videos. And let me know your thoughts. Do you think we'll ever figure out who's really responsible for this? Or let me know if you think it's, was it Iran or was it Libya? Let me know. Of course, if you want to support the channel, you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS. As always, thank you so much for watching and listening. We'll see you next time.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.